Here's the latest from YumaDailyNews.com. Gopher High School drama students will be performing You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. You can get ticket info right now at YumaDailyNews.com. A 35-year-old man lost control of his SUV. He ended up driving into a canal. People were trying to help him out of the water. Find out what happened on the website. A man has been arrested by Welton border agents this week. Agents later found out he had multiple charges. More info on the website. Arizona voters have said they support mail-in ballots. Voters say it's more convenient and secure. You can learn more about it at YumaDailyNews.com. A French bulldog has been found in a car after a man was shot. The pup was hurt and also stolen. Find out more, YumaDailyNews.com. And a bill has made it illegal in Arizona to perform an abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. That bill is now heading to the governor's desk after it passed. The bill does allow exceptions for a medical emergency, but not for rape or incest. Read more, YumaDailyNews.com. For now, that's the latest. I'm Andrew Caravella.
It's going to be on the hot side here across southwest Arizona over the next few days. We'll see a good deal of sunshine the rest of the day, a high getting up close to 90. A few clouds around tonight, a low in the upper 50s. Could be near record heat potentially on Friday. Partly sunny with a high of 96 degrees. Average high this time of year is 82. So shorts and t-shirts weather, stay hydrated. If you're a valued customer, you deserve a simple gesture of appreciation from your credit card company. And that's why Discover matches all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. Discover exceptionally common sense. I'm meteorologist Mark Thibodeau at the Weather Channel.
The opinions voiced in this show, Money Talk, are for general information only and not intended for specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management investment advisory services are offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
Good morning, Yuma. Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggerberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage in studio. Also, Tom Rush, Yuma Investment Group. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning.
Color commentary over on the board. Russ Clark, good morning.
Good morning.
So, you know, lots to talk about and nothing new. I mean, at the same time, we could talk about this forever. And if anybody's not paying attention, have interest rates gone up? Hey, we got a call already. Let's take a call. You are on the air.
This is ST Data calling about your Google My Business listing.
Oh, wow. I didn't know we had that.
Hey, I didn't even realize we could Google My Business right about now. You know, by the way, are you not absolutely like frustrated with the amount of calls and spam stuff?
On the cell phone.
Okay. Yeah. So two things I want everybody to do, because that was just kind of funny and good timing. Go to optoutprescreen.com and go to the Do Not Call registry.
Done it. I still get them.
And you still will, but go
not
register
as many,
on.
Yeah, it'll reduce. The honest guys will stop. Anyway.
They will. You know, then they just start spoofing your number. I think I had Russ Clark call me the other day, and it was actually somebody asking me about my student loans.
I had Russ Clark call me.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of them make it like look like a local call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not, but they somehow reroute it, I guess. Huh? Yeah.
I've literally had friends' numbers in my phone spoofed somehow. So it's the oddest thing. You think somebody's calling, but anyway, you look at what's going on right now, and sometimes it just doesn't feel like it if you're not in the industry. So I know we all pay attention to gas prices. Gas prices are up basically what? Dang near 100% in the last 18 months.
Oh yeah.
So people understand prices are going up. We hear things on the news talking about inflation is running 7.5%. But you look at mortgage rates, and about a year ago, we were talking about rates that were in the low threes to mid threes, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. And now, I mean, you can go Google this right now, and this is not specific per program, but Freddie Mac says the average interest rate right now is 4.42% with 0.8 discount points and fees. So, you know, Freddie Mac is telling you the average interest rate is basically 4.5. Now, what does that mean? When does Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae know what the interest rate is? Do they know let's say I'm going to do a mortgage for Tom and he and I agree, here's where the rate is and we're going to go lock it. Does Freddie Mac know that's locked yet?
I don't know.
They do not. When does Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac know about the interest rate?
They have to know when they cut the
check. The deal is done.
When it's delivered.
When it's delivered.
When it's delivered. So if, let's say I lock Tom for 60 days, Fannie and Freddie are not going to know about that being collateralized for 65, 70 days until it goes into the MERS system. The MERS system is the Mortgage Electronic Recordation System. So again, some of this data that you and I see, we think we have instant access to data. I mean, we're so used to turn on Fox News and CNN and, you know, you see something happening in real time. I'm sorry, the mortgage rates that they put out online are not real time. It's data that's collected as fast as they can. But if Freddie Mac is saying the average interest rate is approximately 4.5, where do you think interest rates are now? 4.75 It's going higher. Yeah, it's no different than your gallon of gas. So I just want everybody to pay attention. Is now a good time to buy? Yes. Things are still affordable. However, house prices are going up and interest rates are going up. And if interest rates went from, let's say, just 3 to 4, I'm not really good in math, but I'm pretty sure that's a 33% increase.
Yes.
So that, you know, again, we talk about 7.5% inflation, but would you want to pay 33% more on the debt cost for your house?
Nope.
So I don't know if you can put that in the numbers for listeners, but let's just say that rates went from 3 to 4%. So let's just call it 1% increase.
Mm-hmm.
So say you have, what's the average house in Yuma? 280?
Let's call it 250.
250, okay. So what do you think that does to a mortgage?
Well, per 100,000, if you said year one in interest, $1,000 is on a $100,000 loan, 1% increase would be $1,000. So $1,000 divided by 12 months, that's 8,333. So it's about 83 bucks a month.
So 2,500 divided by 12 months, about 200 bucks more. Mm-hmm. A month for your house.
Yeah.
In quick numbers.
So, you know, you're talking somewhere between, on the average home here, you're $200 to $300 a month more just on the debt carrying cost. So there's a, it's not a, oh my gosh, I got to go really fast. And it's not, hey, I'm going to lose out. Yeah. You know, you might have lost out on the 3% interest rates, but just paying attention to where rates are going to go. HES and the Fed doesn't control mortgage rates. They control the access to money, which then would drive interest rates, but they don't control them directly. But do we believe the Fed is going to continue pushing rates higher?
Yes.
That.
So, I mean, if you put rates in perspective, it's still a low rate at 4.5 or whatever it is. But, you know, the Fed, I mean, everyone's saying right now there's 6 more increases in the Fed rate, which really means they have to do one almost every other month.
Every other month.
Pretty much. Now, I never watched the mortgage rate against the Fed rate, but I assume when they think that the Fed's going to raise rates, the mortgage probably adjusts before it happens.
So here's what, again, there's a short-term effect and a long-term effect. So when the Fed raises rates, who does that actually stifle? It makes it more expensive for corporate America to borrow money because the big banks, that's the short-term Fed funds rate. So really what happens is they're trying to slow the economy down, which then forces the stock market to come back and restrict a little bit. When over the short run for the first 6 months, when there's a Fed rate hike, it actually helps interest rates in under 6 months because people take their money out of equities and move it into safe, secure bonds because you assume you're not going to lose any money. But we all know that the Fed is going to do this because they're trying to slow the economy down and it's growing too fast. So after that 2 to 3 month jolt in the stock market, when everybody goes, oh, geez, we're still going to grow like crazy and profits are still going to be amazing with corporate America, they pull their money back out of bonds and go put it back into the equities and interest rates keep rising. So in the short run from a raise, 1 to 3 months, we actually get a skosh better. After 3 months, guaranteed after 6 months, our interest rates keep rising.
So, I mean, I'm sure you have experts in your industry that tell you where things are heading. What, like in the next 2 to 3 years, is there any people out there trying to predict where mortgages might be?
Yeah, the industry is really pushing that it's going to be over 5 within the next 12 months. And when you say 2 to 3, there are some people out there that are saying they could start with a 6 in the next 2 to 3 years. But again, you look at historically,
it's not bad.
5 is still good. It really is. Now, here's the couple things. Is our wages keeping up with the inflation numbers?
No. They never do to begin with, ever.
So, you know, if you waited from now until, let's say, interest rates started 5.25, you know, if you lose another 0.75 in your rate on a $200,000 home, that's $1,500. Divide that out by 12. There's another $125 a month that's going to cost you if you wait 6 to 9 months until interest rates start with a 5. It's just going to continue to get slightly more expensive, not unlike that gallon of gas. We all go to the pump and we all pay it, and there's no way to change it, but you can see it getting more and more expensive. You know, when you look at some of the lending programs, we've talked about the down payment assistance programs with the state, and the way the state of Arizona and all states, all 50 states do them, they give you a higher interest rate. That's how they recoup their money. Guess what the interest rate is right now for a 3% grant from the state? Not a lot of money, 3% towards your down payment.
4.5, 4.75. I don't
know. Come on, Tom. I'd say a little less. I don't know.
5.75%. So
that's what I meant to say.
That is what you meant to say. I saw it. So right now, the state of Arizona is going to give you 3% towards the down payment, but the interest rate that you and I take is 5.75%. There's no negotiating, no haggling. That's where it is. The state of Arizona normally offers a 4% and a 5% grant. They don't even offer those. Their sheet came out for the last 3 weeks, says NA, not available. Why are they not willing to give you a 5% or a 4% grant? Because they can't even get consumers to take an interest rate over 6. They would have to charge over 6% for that interest rate to recoup the money the state of Arizona gave back. So they've basically cut everything out of the rate sheet from the state, except for the 3% grant, because they can't publicly say it's over 6%. We'll talk about that way more after the break. This is Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 1808.99. With Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 1808.99. With Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Beautiful Friday here in Yuma. It's going to get a little hotter here. Tom Rush, Yuma Investment Group. We got Derek Eggeberg. We're doing our dual show this morning. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning.
So you're talking a little bit about rates and how rates are going up. The Fed's probably going to be on a mission to raise rates. Now, one of the things that's coming out more, you know, you're hearing it out there a lot, is a lot of these economists and that think the Fed's not raising rates quick enough. And that can lead to problems with the economy. One of the things they see that could be coming down the pipe is called stagflation. Sounds like a cool name, doesn't it, Russ?
Yeah.
Stagflation.
Sounds like something you can't cure.
Yeah.
But anyways, stagflation is when the economy isn't doing as well, but inflation keeps going up. And it's actually a bad combo to have. If you look at when the last time the United States had a recession was 2011, which has been quite some time. And a definition of a recession is two negative quarters of GDP. So January of 21, our GDP number was at 7.5. By the end of the year, it's at 2% positive, so still positive. So it's going to be really interesting to see where the GDP number comes out at the end of March, which is sometime in April. And then if it's negative and it does it again by June, you know, we'll technically be in a recession, which we haven't had in a while. Now, the thing about a recession is I look back and look at all the recessions from 1949 to present, and, you know, they go down different amounts for different durations. But if you look at the recessions that had inflation at the time, and that was in the late 60s, mid-70s, and the early 80s, right when Reagan got in office from Carter, the average downturn in the S&P was about 20 months. So that means the market went down for 20 months before we went the other direction back up. So when you have a recession and inflation, it adds kind of dirt to the wound where the economy will get better, but it gets delayed out. So everyone's used to the market, you know, dropping down for 6 months and then shooting back up or that. But this could be a little bit more of a downturn. So I think in the next, you know, the writing's going to be on the wall by the end of the summer, July, August, September, to see exactly where we're at with the economy. The only thing that I, you know, and I read stuff, so I'm not a technical guy. I just take other people's ideas and stuff. But, you know, with inflation going up the way it's going, and they think the next big shoe that's going to drop is going to be food price. And
already has, hasn't it?
No, that's talking like you know how gas was up 50% from a year ago? Now it's up 100%.
Yeah.
They think food's going to go up.
Double.
Or, yeah. I mean, when I.
Well, Biden just talked yesterday that, you know, shortages are coming. You know, it's going to be.
Well, he made a comment that said we're going to have food shortages. So, I told my wife, and I tell the listeners out there, go to Sam's Club, buy a big thing of rice or beans or whatever you guys cook. I mean, I don't know what you can store, but you're going to go back, and all those staples are going to be higher, I think. Wheat, that type of thing. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, stuff that'll sit on the shelf for a couple of years.
Yeah. But so anyways, I think inflation, in my opinion, is probably going to get the best of us, and come late summer, we'll probably see where we're at, but it wouldn't surprise me if the GDP number...
So how much is a 50-pound bag of pinto beans?
I don't do the shopping, but it, you know, surprisingly, it probably could double in price. I don't know. Anyways, so back to the real estate market, because you were talking about interest rates. Still talking to people around town, and I know you probably have your network of realtors and clients, but the housing market is still pretty hot in Yuma.
Very hot. You know, again, if you look at homes under, say, 275, you're still seeing multiple offers come in same day. You know, you're seeing a lot of highest and best. You're seeing some offers over asking price because there just isn't a lot of inventory. And the builders are building pretty much as fast as they can. But again, we've had supply shortages, labor shortages, and you can only build a house so fast. But at the same time, you're seeing people continue to move this direction. So I still see people from California, Washington, Oregon moving this direction. And so, and it's not just winter visitors or elderly people. It's people who have learned they can telecommute. They're coming here. They keep their job. They keep their California wages. But they're buying a Yuma, Arizona house because it's so super cheap compared to what they're used to. And so, like right now, you were asking me what the market's like. So, you know, anybody can find this data. Go to realtor.com and you can search houses. So right now, Yuma, Arizona, realtor.com, under $275,000 or under is the purchase price I put in, three bedrooms or more, two baths or more, and any property type. How many homes do you think? Now, any property type is condo, townhouse, single family, multifamily, and manufactured.
So all of them, pretty much.
How many homes do you think are on the market in Yuma, Arizona, 275 or under?
I mean, it's going to be a low number, but I would say less than 15. I don't know.
Russ?
I don't know.
53.
53?
Now, if I take out manufactured homes, there are now 38 homes listed. So 38 homes in all of the Yuma area.
That's it.
275 or under. That's how hot that market is.
Whoa.
Is, you know, you think about how many people that's, I mean, that's bread and butter all the way down to 100, 110, 120. First-time homebuyers, let's be brutally honest, most first-time homebuyers are not looking for a $275,000 home. You know, again, when you figure where interest rates are for every $1,000 you finance on a normal FHA loan, and this is general terms, but on a normal FHA loan with interest rates where they are, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, and the PMI, for every $1,000, it's about $6.50. So a $100,000 home would be about $650 a month. A $200,000 home would be about $1,300 a month. Most people who are going to move out of an apartment want a home that's $1,200 to $1,500 a month. So when you say the average sales price in Yuma is now north of $250.
It's above that.
Yeah. Now you're talking about a $1,700 payment.
And I know some of these realtors that do management on properties or rentals, a lot of these owners are requesting a $100, $200, $300 increase in rent.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be pretty standard. So, you know, the old days is you could have bought and probably had a cheaper payment than renting. I don't know if that's still the case, but probably not as much, right?
Well, so here's, again, rents have not risen as fast as everything else has risen. So you're correct. Most of the property managers I know, they have literally no vacancies. When somebody moves out or their lease expires, they're putting people in for significantly more than what the previous rent was. And you see a lot of townhouses are now $1,300 to $1,600 a month, which is kind of in line with where that payment would be. Again, if you bought a home for $220 and the payment is $1,700 a month, you would expect the rent to be at least $1,500 to $1,600 a month, fairly close. In a lot of cases, it's inverse. It's a little higher. But no, rents have risen quite a bit because of the same housing shortage. There's just not anything out there. So if you call any of the top, you know, property managers, they've got a waiting list. They've got a very long waiting list. Wow. And all of a sudden, you know, again, it's almost the who's the highest and best candidate to move in. Who's, you know, maybe they're willing to. I actually heard somebody was offering more rent than what the home was going for. So their application was accepted. Kind of like a sales price of a house. So, you know, but again, it's still.
I've never heard of that. You overshoot the price of a house, but you overshoot the rent just to make sure you get it.
That's what was done. And I believe they got it. I'm not sure, but I believe they got it. But it is interesting.
So I have an interesting story. So on a Saturday morning, I was going into work. It was about 5 in the morning. And I was at the gas station. I said, this guy's next to me sitting in a Porsche. And he looks kind of T-shirt on, looks kind of Jimmy Buffett style kind of guy. So I started talking to him. I said, hey, you passing through Yuma? He goes, yeah, I'm from California. And I said, oh, where are you going? He's like, I'm actually going to Phoenix. And he goes, I'm actually going to sell my four rental houses in San Diego. And I'm buying houses in Santan, which is outside of Phoenix. And so he, you know, you hear these stories, but it was interesting to see someone talk to someone about exactly what they're doing. And I said, well, you know, the price in San Diego's housing's price is high, but I said it's still high in Phoenix. And he was like, yeah, I don't really care about that. You know, once I pay these things off, I'm just in it for the cash flow. He goes, I don't get too specific on overpaying because he goes, I'm just going to rent them out. I mean, so I was like,
wow.
You know, I mean, I was like, okay, well, that, you know, makes sense. But anyways, I think that's happening more than you think. I mean,
it is the cash flow, and you're seeing a lot of people from California, a lot of people from Washington. They're selling their houses. They're moving this direction. Certainly investors could do the same thing, because if you buy and sell in the same market, you're really not gaining and you're not losing. You know, you hear all these people that try to time the market. Oh, I want to sell my house at the high and then wait and buy at the low. Well, interest rates are going to screw up that thing, because even if you thought house prices were going to fall, which I don't believe they're going to for quite some time.
Right.
But even if you said, hey, I'm going to wait, if interest rates went from the middle fours to six, you're losing anything that you might gain unless you found a screaming deal. But in his case, I'm assuming you're going to sell San Diego properties for significant dollars.
Sure.
And move to the Phoenix area for significantly less in purchase price. And yeah, he's probably going to have, I don't know, if he's selling four over there, he's going to have 4 to 10 free and clear properties in Phoenix and probably live fairly well on that cash flow.
Yeah, he told me he actually could buy, for one house in San Diego, he could buy about a house and a half over in Santan. But he says he's buying nicer property too. He doesn't buy bad rentals, but So his four houses would be worth six houses in Phoenix. So,
no.
But go back to, you know, way back in the day, if you remember, when we had the real estate run back in 04, 05 and into 06, you had people buying houses that had no idea what cash flow was. They weren't investors. They were, you know, base wage earners that the news media convinced them, hey, we can go buy a house. We can make a lot of money and go do that. And that's not what it should be. It should be the cash flow. At least that guy was saying it right. He's buying something that he wants to cash flow, which is the reason you buy, you know, investment real estate. Most people, not all, most people don't do well on the speculation of appreciation. You're buying it because of cash flow.
I like that idea better.
How about new houses being built in Yuma? I don't pay attention that much, but I don't know if you do. I'm sure these contractors are gearing up, right? I mean, now's the time to build?
They've been geared up for 2 years. I mean, again, it's they haven't artificially shirked the building ability. It's supply issues, it's labor issues, it's amazing that you drive around and most of the builders have now hiring signs. Most of them never had now hiring signs out front. Same thing. There's been times where you're limited to how much drywall you can buy. There's times you're limited to how much paint you can buy. So some of it has just been literally the input resources to put these houses up. So we can talk about that way more after the break. Russ is waving his hands wildly. This is Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 180899, with Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 180899, with Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081. Hey, Yuma, Money Talk, AM 560, KBLU, Tom Rush, Derek Eggeberg, Russ Clark. We're talking mortgages, credit, the market, all kinds of good stuff.
Well, and I need to go to Disney World is what I found out.
Yeah. You do? Yeah, well, you're going to have to take your grandbaby there and your daughter and, you know, go have some fun.
Yeah, it was suggested to me that I should be offering my granddaughter incentives on educational incentives. And tie them to trips like to Disneyland, which is close.
You totally should.
Yeah, I should.
I think, when are you going to start that? Should we bring her in here right now and tell her that?
I'm going to start this year.
Okay.
You know, the financial industry has different, you know, fads, you might say. But one of the things out there is saying, instead of leaving your kids money when you die, is to create memories while you're living.
Right.
So that basically saying, you know, rent a beach house, invite your kids, grandkids, or whoever, and do more of that than to leave them money.
Oh, I've been leaving her memories. Most of them she'd have to sit and talk to a shrink about.
I'd say
my
therapy.
But, you know, you think like, okay, if someone was left $100,000, it would probably have a decent impact. But
sure,
if you look at what people do with inherited money, when it's not a ton of money, it's gone. I mean, in 3 to 5 years, I mean, maybe some of it's put towards some good use. But in general, the impact's not as big as you think.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, you know, most people, it evaporates.
Well, as long as, and it is interesting that you see some kids that are finally telling their parents, look, we don't want your money. Don't stress about saving those last $5. It's not a big deal. And some of the things that, you know I've been through it. I think you've been through it. But you think, no, mom, dad, grandpa, go take the trip. Go do what you want with your money. And if you want to build the memories, cool. Let's do that stuff too. Yeah. But, you know, you see, and my mom was that way before she passed away. She so wanted to leave money for kids. And it's like, mom, go take the trip. Go to Broadway. You and your best friend, go take the trip to Broadway and go do those things for a week. It doesn't matter what you spend. Go enjoy it. And it's funny how some people just have that. Their association mentally and emotionally is they want to leave their kids something as opposed to having an enjoyable experience themselves.
Yeah.
And
I think some people, you know, if you look at their habits, I think some of them have like a sickness where they can't spend money and they have a ton of money. And it's just
how you grew up,
ingrained in their, you know.
Grew up in the depression. Yeah. You saved.
Just like some people can't stop working. And I'm sure Russ probably might be one of these guys.
I'm one of them.
But I mean, you see that, like, the retirement's not even on the table. I mean, they'll work.
I don't even look at retirement any more than Donald Trump does. I mean, he's not retired.
Yeah,
he's 74.
But is that healthy? Is it, you know? I don't know.
I've known people retire and
and
die
then
in a month,
dead, and yeah,
yeah.
But where has it ever been programmed? We have to only work 40 hours a week, and we have to retire after 20 or 25 years. I mean, those are really. I mean, social things and governmental things. That I mean, where did we come up with 40 hours a week?
I don't know. That it was negotiated somewhere.
If you look at all the countries in the world, like Americans clearly work a lot harder, less holidays.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on like the bottom end of the.
Now, I'm going to be 65 in September. I'll be here on air in October.
Nice. do you have all of your stuff, your AARP card and everything else?
I'll never do AARP.
Okay.
I'm not old enough. But I remember getting it when I was 50 or something. You get it in the mail, and I thought, well, it's so rude. It's too early. You know, it still is. but I have to register for Medicare within 3 months before I turn 65.
Hmm. So you were talking about that. But, Tom, do you have people, when you say you've got people that don't spend money and can't come up with the memories or we wish they would, do you have people that are so focused on their savings and their investing or their amount in their portfolio that it becomes almost restrictive for them and they're over it?
I don't think it's not that they're counting every dime because a lot of these people have money, but they just have a hard time going out spending it.
Yeah.
Like if you said, hey, let's go to Juliana's and, as you know, one of their nicer steaks is, you know, a lot of money. They just can't do it. I mean, it's just, you know, they'd rather have the peanut butter and jelly sandwich than to go out and have.
And even if they're financially secure, it doesn't matter, right?
Doesn't matter, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's almost, you know, it's not a sickness, but it kind of is. I mean, if you can.
I think it's
enjoy
a better one than,
life,
than spending beyond your means.
That's another sickness.
There's, yeah.
It's just different. You know, they say that most people are have money issues based on how they were raised as a kid, whether you're wealthy family, you know, alcoholic family, spoiled family. That usually ingrains people on how to do it. But it's all a habit. I mean, everything in life is a habit, right? I mean, you get up to go to work. That's a habit. You eat every day. That's a habit. So if you can ingrain money saving tips into your life as a habit, a lot of people that end up with a lot of money at the end never maybe made a lot of money, but they had great habits on how to do it. Yeah. And one of the habits that people are missing nowadays, I mean, I say people, I see the younger generation is they don't like risk. And, you know, if you saved a lot of money through your life and put under your mattress, it would get cut in half about every 20 years due to the cost of living, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's hard to make to make money through safe means like a savings account or under your mattress. So a lot of people need to go out and take risk in real estate, take risk in the market, take risk and put money away, you know, for retirement. But the younger generation, I see is they're
risk averse,
spooked. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Which isn't good because it means the wealth won't build as quick, right?
Yeah, I'd rather spend it at Starbucks and I can't lose it.
Yeah.
But you're not far off that it's become so easy to spend money quickly. Tom, growing up, when you were 16, did you have a credit card?
No.
No. Did you have easy access to your money? If you had any money, it was either in cash or...
I was from Dayton, so there wasn't too many ATMs out there.
But that's what I'm saying is it was hard to access money if your parents or your grandparents put it in the bank for you. It was a chore to go get it. You didn't have a credit card. And I had she's not young, but I had a young woman come in yesterday and wants to know if she can buy a house. Now, she has 9 credit cards. She's under 30, by the way, just from an age bracket perspective. She has 9 credit cards. How many of them do you believe are over 75% used?
Oh, I hate to hear this.
All of them? I don't know.
Every one of them.
Every one of them.
How many of them are over her limit?
Over their limit?
Over the limit.
Oh, God, 5?
4. So almost half of her cards are over limit. Everything is over 75%.
But I'm sure her interest rate's really low. I'm sure she has.
Oh, yeah.
When you go over your limit, it goes from like 15 to 24, whatever it is, right?
So she has everything maxed that she could. And none of them are huge cards. I mean, none of them, the highest one is a $1,000 credit limit. So none of them are huge cards.
So she's sitting there with about $8,000 of just junk.
But it's so easy for her to spend that she can't get herself under control and get those balances down under and start paying them off. And this is not the first time she and I met. We've talked before, and it's just too easy for her to spend.
That's a problem.
And she wants to know when she can buy a home and when her credit will get fixed. And like we've said, if you pay your balances down and you get them all under 50%, you will have the right credit score and you can go forward. But if you're living beyond your means, because obviously what the credit bureaus ding your credit score is, when you're over 50% used, you're living technically beyond your means. When you're over 100% of your credit limit, okay, they're clearly going to whack you down because you're over your allowed limit.
Those are the easiest to fix, though. In other words,
it would be, but she came into my office with a coffee from an expensive coffee shop.
But it was only $5. Don't worry about
that. That's when you pull the scissors out of your drawer and say, get your cards out.
Yeah.
Cut a couple up right here.
But you go back to what you were saying, some of the habits. It's the habit of too easy to spend money sometimes. You talked about a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. How many people take their lunch to the office anymore instead of saying, hey, I'll be right back. I'm going to lunch. And you go run through a drive-thru. And I don't care.
95% probably eat at the drive-thru.
It's totally okay. That's a great thing to do. If you want to go out and eat, great. But do you have the habit of saving money first or budgeting? And that's probably the thing I see is I still do a written budget on a piece of paper with a #2 graphite pencil every month. You know, now I'm using erasable ink.
As I said, I meant to, but I couldn't find the pencil. I don't know what it is.
You know, I don't know how many of your customers actually have a budget or a budgeting software or a program, but it's amazing how many of the younger people don't budget.
Yeah. I mean,
at least they never broke their
budget. Keep in mind, 75% of the GDP number is based on Americans spending money. So as long as we keep spending money.
You know, I'm here just to cause hate and discontent. But I don't care. Again, go spend money. But like this lady, she makes decent money. It's not great. Yeah. It's not life-changing money, but she makes decent money. But she will not pay herself first or second. She goes and does everything she wants and then says, I don't have any money to pay down my debt. And secondly, I don't have any extra money to invest. If she would just turn the prism a little bit and pay herself first and spend less money on the bougie coffee or the eating out, because when you look at the bank statements, you can tell where people go. She could make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or a turkey sandwich every day.
And people don't think about it, but you know, when you shop at JCPenney's, you get a JCPenney's card, and it starts out like maybe $300 or something. But yeah, people say, oh, sure, I take one. But those are the things that bite you. I mean, I don't know, with her eight cards, that seems like a lot of cards. But how many of them were any of them cards from like Kohl's or Target or anything? Or are they all credit card?
Three, maybe four were department store cards. Yeah. Trying to picture her.
And those are a trap, I think. I mean, you're better off if you're going to go in there and buy something, just pay for it.
Well, yes and no. If you understand good habits, let's talk about playing the game the right way. We've talked about 0% interest rate credit cards forever. It's a game. It's a way that, you know, the people who use it effectively really can have 0% interest, and the people that don't end up paying the difference. You look at some of these, you know, I've got three boys, my gosh, putting clothes on them. They grow like weeds, shoes, pants, shirts. So, you know, Kohl's, if you use your Kohl's card, will a lot of times give really big discounts. And so do I have a Kohl's card that I go buy all of my boys' stuff all in one big whack when there's a big sale and get 25 or 30% off? I do. But then I guarantee you, as soon as that comes due, I'm paying it like it was cash at that time because I want to recoup the savings. I don't want to pay that high interest because it really is a very high interest rate on that card. If you play the game that way and you just are smart with it, it's very easy to spend the same amount of money and save money. If you're not really smart, it's very easy to lose way more than what you ever saved.
And I guess it's a good way to build credit. If you're trying to build credit, those little store cards, you know, is a good way to get started, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, those, it's so easy to build credit. It really is. I mean, for crying out loud, if Russ Clark can build credit, the rest of us can build credit.
That's right.
So that lady with the credit cards, what was her score? I'm just curious. It's probably to be pretty bad.
Right? It was below 600.
And you start doing that, you're going to be nailed.
And again, because three of them are over limit, that's whacked her credit score. And there's she could move her credit score probably 85 points in 30 days if she had the funds. Now, to most people in that bracket, what is she counting on? Where is she going to get a very nice check of free money?
Well, because of my IRS refund.
There you go.
Yeah,
so she's counting on a very big refund.
Yeah.
And that's where she thinks she's going.
After she goes to Disney World.
Oh, I don't know about that. She didn't tell me that. Tom Rush is the only one who said he's going to Disney World. So that and you and your granddaughter. So when are you going to build that memory?
She's only 4.5, probably this fall.
Okay, she's 4.5. She would totally understand Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse. Come on.
It's going to be just her and I, though.
Uh-oh.
That's it. I'm not taking Mom. I'm not taking...
Is that for cost savings, or you can build the memory just with your granddaughter?
I would like to say the memories only, but it was cost.
Okay, so will you allow her to walk around with a churro in each hand?
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. And will you have one in each hand?
No. I have to make sure my hands are free to help her.
A $12 churro.
Hey, you know what? Those are memories. That's right there. But that's a destination memory. It's not a cup of coffee on the way to work memory. It's not a, you know, very expensive lunch.
She's at the right age. She should probably believe all the stuff. You know what I mean? At that age, you're like, princess.
I got to tell you, though, she helped at Midnight at the Oasis. She was probably one of the best salespeople that we had there.
Oh, she wants to be an adult. She wants to join in.
You can tell she's watched you and her mom a lot because
she's going to be at work with me today, and she'll be cleaning bathrooms, taking out garbage. She'll be doing all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Working with customers.
Make sure she lifts the heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Changing some oil.
Well, I don't know. I'll have her in the shop.
Yeah, don't do that.
But she will. She finds enjoyment. I want to promote that.
Very
cool. Out of work. My kids still remember. They still, when I own Napa, they remember the times coming in to do inventories and do that.
So we've talked, I mean, inflation, the market, Fed increases this next year, home prices going up, interest rates going up. What would you be doing right now, Tom? Because I know you've got some great software and you rebalance portfolios and you've got active management. Is there anything that you want the average consumer to pay attention to right now?
Well, I just think you have to have a game plan. If you know, markets do drop, we go into a recession, you know, how do you take advantage of that is what it comes down to. And like most things, you got to position yourself to take advantage. And buying low, selling high is the name of the game. Warren Buffett always said, buy when there's blood in the street. So if you aren't positioned to become a buyer at that time, then you're not taking advantage of the situation. So there's things you can do to position yourself to have funds available to do something like that. Like I said, the last time we took a recession hit was 2011, so we're way overdue just on time alone. But with all the prices and things going up and the supply side issues and now the issues in Europe and that, I'm not saying it's a perfect storm, but it's pretty looking pretty good. Yeah.
But you just said, I mean, there's always opportunities. You know, Warren Buffett talks about buy when there's blood in the streets. What should people be doing other than really paying attention? Do you want them to call you? Do you want them to just kind of look at their portfolio or just kind of sit back and come up with their own game plan? Or is there anything that you should do?
Do you like suggestions when people come in and says, I'm really interested in this market or something?
Well, I mean, so there's two types of people. One is just put your head in the sand and don't think about it.
Yeah.
The other one is I'm smart enough to figure out how to do it on myself.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, you know, that's people are capable. The only thing I think people aren't capable is they haven't lived the experience. So being in the business for 27 years, I've seen the 2000 down, the 94 downturn, the 2000, the 08 downturn. And until you live through some experience, it's hard to completely grasp it. And then there's people that just say, you know what, I know this isn't what I do. And there's people that can help me that are do it, you know, full time. So those are the type of people we work with. Yeah, we're more than happy to work with people that need advice and want to have a game plan. But I always tell people, hey, if you're doing this for cost, because, you know, we're not the cheapest, you can go online and do all this stuff for free. I mean, there's E-Trade and other Scottrade and other things. So, you know, you got to figure out what you're trying to do. And a lot of times, you know, it's more just having a plan and sticking to it non-emotionally. I mean, I tell a lot of people, we're the non-emotional coach and we'll tell you how to move, where to move. We don't have a crystal ball, so we can't say, well, I was right.
Right.
But we're not going to get caught up in the emotions of money.
Well, and plus, with the plan, a lot of it have an automatic deduction out of paychecks or something, so they don't even have to think about it to keep adding.
Yeah. But, I mean, that money that flows in and the market goes down is a good thing because you're buying as it drops. So when it reverts back the other way, you know, you're probably in a good position. But what I'm talking about is people that have $200,000, $300,000 in their thrift savings or the 401k, and maybe they're still, you know, 90% stock or 80% stock. So they might have more of a risk position than they want, given where they're at in life.
Right.
Because a lot of times, you know, people get set up on a 401k and then they forget about it for 20 years. And it's still, even if you went in 50-50, 50% bonds, 50% equity in a 401k and left it there for like 12 years, the last 12 years, it's now probably 80-20. Just because of the fact of the equity markets grew that much more than bonds. So a lot of people think, I'm not taking a lot of risk because I signed up as moderate. Well, without rebalancing, you know, maybe they are taking on more risk. So I just say pay attention, try to learn, and hopefully put yourself first. I mean, that's the name of the game, right? I mean, but
I still find it interesting how many people come in because, you know, again, I get to see everybody financially naked. You get to see savings, the assets, all of it. How many people don't fully fund their 401k or their employer-sponsored programs? Now, and I know you guys are good in math. If an employer matches 50 cents on the dollar, what's the rate of return on your investment?
100% for the first amount put in, because you're getting 100%.
50 cents on the dollar.
50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
So,
well,
but,
I mean,
as an example, Academy Mortgage matches 50 cents on the dollar for your first 6% that you put in. So if an employee put in $1,000, Academy is going to put in $500.
Who would say no to that?
It's a 50% return on your investment. And I know employers that do 100% match.
Yeah.
And you still see people that don't fully fund their 401ks, their employer stuff. It's like, why are you not paying yourself first? That's probably the biggest thing that from my vantage point, you know, I see a lot of people before they get to you. You see them after they've amassed some wealth. But how many people are not taking advantage of that free money? We like free stuff. Take advantage of the free stuff into your retirement, for crying out loud.
The other thing, how many people are stuck thinking that maxing out the 401k because I'm putting in, you know, maybe $15,000. When the max now is $20,500.
Yeah.
So they just, you know, it was $16,000, you know, 6 years ago, but they just think, I'm maxing it out. Then, you know, they're not. So, you know, that happens a lot. People just think they're doing something and they're really not. So paying attention. But so, nowadays, there's 401ks in that where you can have them increase your amount automatically every year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not every 401k is that way, but with technology and things, you know, go back to your 401k and see if there's mechanisms that can have you increase as you go. Even if you did a percentage of what you put in, say it's 10%, well, if you get raises and you get overtime and other bonuses or whatever, mm-hmm. that 10% will be more money. So don't put in dollar amounts, put in percentages. That alone will help you.
And I would say one of the other things is actively manage that, where it's okay. You can go in with most of these online portals. You can go in and change it per pay period. You could go in and say, oh, my gosh, it's a good pay period. I'm going to add more. Oh, my gosh, I've got an expense at home. I need to put less in. But you can get in there and do that at any time. It's not set it and then you're committed forever. But I do like that automatic increase where most of the people I run across, especially in our office, you know, you've got the mandatory 1% increase unless you go backwards and revert it. So each staff member puts a little bit more in each and every year because you assume you're going to get some kind of wage increase year over year. Adding 1% more into your 401k doesn't seem like a big deal if you've gotten a raise more than 1%.
Yeah, even if you don't get a raise, 1% would not be missed.
Nope.
I mean, those things that you're doing then.
Unless you're stopping for coffee and fast food and stuff every day.
Not a good idea.
You know, that's why Dave Ramsey has the old envelope thing where you put your money in for your coffee, put the money in for restaurants, and that way when the envelope's gone, you don't do it anymore until you get your next paycheck and you put money in the envelope.
Russ used to do that, but his granddaughter figured out where the envelopes are, so he doesn't do that anymore.
She knows where they are.
See? That's the problem. So granddaughter, actually, you know, it's funny. She had enough money to buy a hat and shirts when we were out at midnight at the Oasis. I never saw a 4.5-year-old with money in her pocket, but it's weird. Yeah. So well taught there, Russ. So
I think she knew how to put it on my charge account.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see that. So, but anyway, other than that, you know, it's still an amazing market, I would tell people, for housing. Please don't try to time the market. Just if you need a house, it's still a great time to buy. If you're speculating, you better be really smart if you're trying to speculate, because that's not where we are for the most part. But housing is still affordable, especially if you look at nationwide housing here in Yuma, Arizona. Super affordable. Uh-oh.
These are my envelopes.
Those are your envelopes?
For the baby girl.
Okay.
And she's allowed to use certain amounts.
I hear a little change in there.
There's change. But those are her envelopes for whatever it is that she's allowed to spend.
So if we shake it enough at the door, is it going to be like Pavlov's dog where she comes in and she knows?
She knows they're hers.
Okay.
And she gets so much and until it's gone. This one's about gone.
And how much do you put in there for her allowance?
Sometimes 10 bucks and quarters and stuff.
10 bucks?
Yeah, but it's for
a week?
Yeah.
But 4.5?
She does not use that in a week. But normally it's just for when we're out and she wants to get a water out of the soda machine or a candy bar or whatever. It's limited to what's in this bag.
At least at that age, she understands money is exchange item.
I make her start counting, too. It's kind of tough at 4. And at, you know, I give her four coins, and she has 4. And I said, okay, that was worth 5. It's, you know, 10, you know. We're getting to that. I mean, we're working on that right now.
You tell the bigger the coin, the better, except for the nickel, the dime.
Except for the nickel.
You reminded me a story. So my youngest son was saving all of his change one time, and he wanted to go buy one of the new Xbox games when, you know, and it was like $60. And he took $60 in quarters with us, and that's what he paid at the register, pulled out $60, and had to stack them in $1 increments on the conveyor belt so he could see that he was actually paying the $60.
Wow.
Super fun to watch. The three people behind me that wanted to punch me in the face.
Super fun.
Super not fun.
Sales tax, he didn't take that consideration, so you had to fork out a little money.
No, he did. He actually had more than that in the bag, and he's like, you know, Dad, I don't ever want to do that again when we're done. I'm like, yeah, I know. So don't do that again. Let's exchange the coins for dollar bills at some point.
Yeah.
But he was super into finding change and saving it that way. And I said, hey, bud, you realize that I don't think any of that was your allowance. I think that was just change you pulled out of either my jar or somewhere else.
I check your pants every day.
Right. So, Russ, do you even have change laying around anywhere, or does she find it and put it in the envelope too?
I automatically pick the change up and make sure that it's corralled so that I have money to put back in these things and to dole it out. But I want to make her super aware of money, what it is, and how much. So when we go to there's a little machine at her place where she wants a little candy bar or something, and I make her repeat what number it is. It's number E3. How much money is it? How many quarters is that? That kind of stuff.
And you know what's funny is Russ is probably going, okay, when she buys that, I'm going to profit 10 cents on that candy bar. Good job, baby girl.
I don't make less than 20, but I think it's important to teach. Mm-hmm. I don't do it for them ever. I direct them. And we work everything else project.
Very cool. We're coming up on the end. What anything?
Yeah, you got like 15 seconds.
Well, you know, people still haven't filed their taxes, so if you haven't, you can still look at funding IRAs, Roth IRAs, or other retirement vehicles. So please keep that in mind. Some of that will lower your income. This is Money Talk. Everyone have a great weekend. Stay safe.
The opinions voiced in this show, Money Talk, are for general information only and not intended for specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management investment advisory services are offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.